coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
All right, pull this up, make sure we're recording. I'm pretty excited for some heavy hitters. They're going to hit you in the heavy in your brain. I just wrote that song for you, Cole.
That was beautiful.
I'm like...
I am deeply touched.
You know, I often
I was
write,
already touched, but now I'm touched.
Arthur Titch? Arthur Titch? What's his name?
Jervis Titch.
Jervis Titch. Jervis Titch. I was reading, speaking of heavy hitters in the brain, even though I don't think his powers, weren't his powers technological? Because I thought there was something in
the
hat.
Yeah, I think he had like a hypno hat.
Yeah, I think he had like the old hypno hat.
The hypno hat, that old chestnut.
That old trope, the hypno hat.
Ringmaster to Mad Hatter.
That's right. All right, well, hi Cole.
Hi Andy.
You've joined us for another edition of Hey Kids Comics. This is 213. This issue goes by many names. You could either refer to it as Power Players or as Cole. Sent me an email today with possibly the best subject line I've ever read in my life, which is, I'd heavy hit that. So,
absolutely.
Or heavy hitters. So you've listened to us talk about being hooked on psionics. Last issue, we did Mind Over Matter. We really talked about the powers. And this one, we're getting into the people that use them. Interesting stuff. We get
It's been all over the map so far, and the map just gets bigger all the time.
It really does. And it's easy to point to a lot of the psionic power users and say, that's one, and that's one, and that's one. But the challenge is identifying those that you don't immediately think of. I think that that's a big challenge for this. And also identifying those that you can point to and say, that one, but how are they using their powers? How has it been written that they're using their powers very creatively? And how are they, you know, really getting on as psionic users? So,
oh, no, not that kind of getting.
I mean, kind of, like, what was it, Demolition Man, where Stallone and Bullock put the mind sex helmet on?
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
You haven't been to that. You haven't been down that road in a while.
I can't say I've ever been down that road. So,
well, you and I need to talk after the show, buddy.
Sounds like a bumpy road.
It's a long and winding road, if you know what I mean.
Yes, indeed. I'm sorry you're afflicted that way.
And it's tough. It's tough. I don't like to talk about it. Yeah. It's like a pig.
That's why they call you the sommelier.
They call me Yeah, that's my alter ego.
Yep.
So what are we talking about tonight, Cole?
Somalia. Is that like French Somalia?
What are we talking about tonight, man?
I'm sorry. I'm just still dumbstruck by my own thought pattern. We are, of course, talking about the heavy hitters, the big bruisers, the guys that just are the tough SOBs. When it, the top of the heap, almost the top of the heap when it comes to psionics.
That's right. And there are a lot out there. I mean, like I said, the most obvious. Okay, so here, let me start by asking you this question. Maybe you'll have an answer. When you are a top tier psionic guy, you know, the powers of the mind are absolute. You can reach into people's minds, take information, put information in, serve as the communication conduit for an entire team or entire whatever continent, however you want to do it.
So you have the you mentioned the linking up of a team. I always thought that was one of the more innovative things is, you know, if you can reach into people's minds, why not reach into everybody's mind simultaneously? It you know, becomes like LinkedIn if it was useful.
if it wasn't a platform for pimping whatever, like, you know. If you what would people's brain job like job description?
Because, oh wow, that would be bad if like psionics just came in, start doing mental pop ups and stuff.
That would perfect. Why haven't they done? Okay,
why that haven't would they, be the ultimate villain?
Why? Yeah, they could give up like the leader could give up hunting the Hulk and become like a direct mind marketer.
Exactly.
Like be reading your mind and like, you want Campbell's soup? Let me tell you what you get Kroger's. If you use your Kroger card, you can get Campbell. Like, why is this in my head right now?
That's right. I'm desperately trying to fight the abomination. You know what an abomination is? Paying too much for your insurance. I don't need this.
This is invasive. You would have to have like a do not call list for your brain.
And then who enforces that? We'll find out in the next issue.
That's right. The next issue is going to be all about the
great lead in there to the next issue.
Bolivar Trask is no longer who was the anti mutant senator?
Trask was the God.
Now we're gonna have to do some research. But it no longer is it anti mutant. It's anti brain pop up. Direct marketing. There's a TED talk about it now. It's the worst. But yeah, no, that was always a cool thing for me was the Jean Grey / Professor X Martian Manhunter direct, mind to mind link up in terms of getting your team communicating was always a cool function that I always really liked.
And it'd be almost akin to the live video feeds for the Marines, Colonial Marines in Aliens, where you've got real time display of what everybody else is up to as well.
Like the heads up display type thing. But,
yeah.
But for everybody. It's
literally heads in, in your heads.
head in display.
Head in display.
A question that I have is this. So if we're talking about these abilities, we were just talking about with direct mind marketing.
Yeah.
At some point, when you can go into somebody's mind and implant thought or read mind, even if it's just surface level, because that's always the thing that they say in the comics. Where, oh, no, I can't. I'm not reading your mind. I'm just picking up surface thoughts. You're really obvious. You're really obvious. You don't have to be a mind reader to know.
Anyone could have picked that up.
Right. To
just
know that
body language.
That Gambit's in love with Rogue. You don't have to be a mind reader for that. At what point do ethics and morals.
But I want to point out I have to be a comic reader. Which we encourage here on this show.
Absolutely. But at what point do ethics and morals go out the window?
Oh, exactly. And at what point, have you crossed that line, into the realm of the supervillain versus the realm of, being a good guy who bends the rules?
But what if it's not even bending the rules? Because the biggest, since we're talking about heavy hitters, I think it's time, talk about Professor X.
Rules are out the window at this point.
But if we're talking about Professor X...
Yeah.
In order to protect, I guess this is the narrative, right? In order to protect Jean Grey from the Phoenix Force, he puts a series of, a lock and dam, series of canals in her brain to stop this thing from getting out. So basically, I guess that's for the best. But then if you look at what he did to Magneto... Because if you followed, I don't know whether you were following comics at the time at which he shut him down and took his powers away.
Oh, no.
And he basically became a pastry chef in San Francisco and had a little dog and played in the park. And then...
So is he Saul Goodman working at Cinnabon? Or...
Sort of, yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. And then the worst part about it is, Professor X would go to the park and visit him. And he would be like, don't I recognize you? And Professor X would be like, no. I've never met you before. We're doing it for his own good. Like, at what point does it stop? Do we care? Do they care? Have they gone so far beyond the pale of what it means to be a human being that it stops being they've evolved into something even further than Homo superior or whatever you might want?
Yeah, and even at that point, have you really? At what point do you make that decision that for the greater good, you're the one who gets to fry somebody's brain or
Right, or pull a Zatanna on somebody, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my question for you as the Jedi justification guy. At what point do these people cross from being? And we're not even talking about the last issue of this arc is godlike. We're not even talking about those people yet. Like, these are just, I don't want to call them just people. Obviously, they're not just people, but. At what point do you have the ability to cross that threshold and start making decisions about other people's lives that maybe you should think twice about making?
Exactly. I think, though, it ultimately becomes a conscious decision of it's almost like a sacrifice for the greater good without any personal sacrifice. It's completely devoid of any personal sacrifice except perhaps any sense of morality and ethics that you may have. You're sort of sacrificing morality and ethics on the altar of the greater good. But, you know, how great a burden is that really? But in the end, you it's one of those, you know, does the end justify the means? And the means are that you have taken it upon yourself to determine. It's like the question raised in, I'm drawing a blank here. The Christopher Walken movie based on a Stephen King.
The Dead Zone.
Yeah. It's like in the Dead Zone. If you were alive as Hitler was coming into power, knowing where that was headed, what choice would you have but to try to stop him?
Sure.
And it's one of those things where the justification becomes, I can see where this is headed, and it isn't good. Somebody needs to be able to do something, and there's nobody who can but me. Does that give you the right to be judge, jury, and executioner? Not necessarily, but then you run into this situation of might making right.
Right.
I mean, if you are the most powerful psionic, if you're making the decision to destroy another psionic for the greater good and not for your own personal gain, then I guess there's some moral latitude there you can play with.
Well, and the thing, I guess what differentiates what we're talking about tonight from what we're going to be talking about with Godlike is we're talking about people who still care about what happens on planet Earth or with human beings. Because once you're at that other level, you're beyond that. It doesn't matter. Like, oh, we have to trifle, you know, we don't want to trifle in the errata or the day-to-day mundanity of mortal men. We are, you know, among the gods is the idea for something like that. This is just, you know, people that have to make these moral decisions on a day-to-day basis. And I think that the moral implications of the mind are very interesting and very nuanced. And I think that's why I think they're pretty cool.
Well, it also becomes sort of an issue that in the rapidly declining in, interesting stories to tell series heroes touches upon with one of its most powerful characters, and that's the Haitian, who after a while just became annoying. But, you know, he could selectively pick memories from your mind and erase them, which is handy if you don't want people, you know, you're trying to cover your tracks, you want to, you know, men in black people. But at the same time, you know, at what point do you say no when
right.
somebody says, you know, hey, I want to get revenge on this guy that hurt my daughter, hollow his head out.
Right.
Leave him a high-functioning vegetable.
But that's – okay, so – you know, that's one of the cool things are those abilities. You know, the team communications officer slash drill into your head and take you down. There's another trope. There's a bunch of tropes that I want to talk about tonight that are pretty awesome when it comes to psychic and psionic abilities. In my research for this and just in comic book reading, the one that always struck me as the strangest is one that I'm referring to as brain in a jar, ladies and gentlemen.
Ah-ha-ha, yes, like the brain.
The brain, which I've been reading again. I've been reading the Doom Patrol Omnibus, and they
that will mess with your head.
Oh my God, you have no idea. But there've been there was an issue in particular where they were trying to update Robot Man's body. So the old
As
clunky,
one does.
Yeah. Well, the old clunky body was, you know, he had no tactile function. He couldn't smell. You know, it was basically just a conduit for, you know, for him to move around, move this brain around. So yeah. The decision was made to update his body into a sleek black body that had, you know, that he could feel things, he could smell things, he could sense, you know, he had senses. But in doing so, they take the brain out of the body and they put it in a jar. They take the body wakes up, having found sentience of its own. And in true Grant Morrison fashion, the conversation is, you know, can the brain without the body, is what makes your humanity? Is it the brain without the body? Is it the body without the brain? Is it the two together? That whole conversation. In the meantime, you know, the Beeline story is the brain and what's the gorilla's name?
Monsieur Mala.
Monsieur Mala, trying to, because they want to get the brain a body. So they know that Robot Man has this body. So they invade the Doom Patrol lair to get this body for the brain. And at some point, it ends up being the gorilla and Monsieur Mala and the body fighting, and the two brains kind of sitting on a counter. Watching this all go down. Yeah, and they also really explore the unrequited love that the last panel or the one of the last panels is the unrequited love being requited between Monsieur Mala and the brain in one of the last panels of the book, because he manages to get inside of the body at one point and they share a tender embrace before you know, it all falls apart. As it always does with supervillains, but
yes, indeed. Well, the wages of sin are death, and there you have it. But
yeah, the brain in a jar trope.
That's a very popular one, because many are the brains in many jars.
Well, if you want to
not
look
to be confused with John Many Jars from Buckaroo Banzai.
But, like, you know, and when we're referring to jar, the definition of jar is very loose. We could be talking about the Red Tornado's body or Cyborg's body or a literal jar when we're talking about the brain. You know, the idea that a brain is powerful enough without a body to exist on its own, and look at Brainiac.
Yeah, and to step a little away from an artificial intelligence from an actual one. But the same idea with Brainiac has been played out. I would suspect it happened somewhere in the comics at some point where Xavier brain jumped, in which case, you know, why not brain jump into, like, you know, Mr. Olympia or something? Not only is it easier to get around, but, I mean, I'm telling you, could Moria McTaggart resist this? You know, jump into Big Jim Slade.
Jump into D-Man.
Oh,
everybody
ow.
Loves some D-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, look at this. Smell this.
Do you smell what the D-Man...
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah.
You gotta kind of let that one go, drift off.
That's some good D-Man.
That's some good D-Man. D-Man, perennial favorite of Hickett's comics.
Oh, yes, indeed. D-Man is the only... Muggerville appropriate character that we didn't create.
That's true.
I think that's why he has a special place in our hearts, is he should belong to us. How dare Marvel make a ridiculously Muggerville level character?
When they do the Muggerville Marvel crossover, much like the DC Marvel crossover, where they had that one guy that was served as the conduit.
Oh, like Access.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that it'll be D-Man. That allows for that crossover to happen.
Speaking of psionics, that is probably an epitomizing psionic power in its own right.
Also sad, because it led to the Marvel DC crossover.
Yeah.
Sorry, John Byrne. Sad.
Sad day for all.
Just sad. You've made me remember that. You owe me. You owe me that back.
I tore open that wound for you.
That's right. Yeah, so... So that was one of the things that I looked at when I was looking at this was just like, man, there are a lot of psychic brains in jars in comic books. A lot of them. Is there something?
There's a preponderance of them, yes.
Well, and a lot of it, I think, stems from the classic sci-fi ideas. You know, when sci-fi was at its heady days of black and white Technicolor sci-fi, there were a lot of, you know, the man with the screaming brain, the man with two brains, well, the brain in a jar.
It's the thing that gives you the thing with two heads,
right?
That gives you Rosie Grier. And I believe Ray Milland, if I'm not mistaken, fused together through Frankenscience into some sort of just bizarre sci-fi, B-movie Zaphod Beeblebrox.
God, that's what we should talk about. Like, let's talk about psionics. I don't feel like they got enough right in the movie, but Sam Rockwell as Zaphod Beeblebrox nailed it on the head. Thank you, guys. Thank you for that. So what is another big heavy hitter type psionic character for you?
I think one of the big heavy hitter psionic powers out there is the takeover, as it were.
Okay.
Where you can either, just force people to do your will.
Right.
Or you can, one of my favorite uses of the takeover was Jericho.
Oh, yes.
From the New Teen Titans. Because one of the neat things about that is it required, there was a requirement of actually achieving eye contact.
That was a cool.
I like thoughtful limiters like that.
Right. That was very
cool. You can't
cool.
just like, you know, go up and like, you know, smack your butt up against somebody else's and oh, I'm in, you know.
Right.
And this isn't a magic trick where you're like, that, hey, look, it's just one card. How did I do that? Oh, it's magic. Because it's sort of like the dead man power idea, though, you know, his is magic based, but to go in and just take control of somebody's body, move their mind aside. But the other cool thing is there was a physical element as well, because his body becomes ethereal. It becomes sort of non-corporeal and invades both mind and body alike.
Right. It becomes an astral projection.
Yeah. He melds into them. And one of the really cool things that they did with that self-limiter, it's like the power itself knows when eye contact has been made, because when they were fighting the hive, there was a really cool scene where, you know, all these hive soldiers are wearing their the basis of the Gavian death gangs from episode 7 costume. And so you have this guy wearing a helmet that's like a ripoff of Wildfire from the Legion of Superheroes, with a great big, you know, smoked glass faceplate.
Right, looked like a what was the movie with Charlie Sheen in it? The Phantom, where he had the ghost car. It looked like his helmet in the Phantom ghost car movie.
Okay, nice. And then there was the but at one point, you know, they come across this enemy soldier. They come face to face with him, and all of a sudden, Jericho's eyes go green or go black behind the green of his eyes, and you have the little caption there from whoever's editing, and you know, it says contact, and then you see him enter this guy, and the guy's freaking out. And I thought what was so cool about that is you can't. Jericho himself can't see that guy's eyes.
Right.
But his eyes made contact with Jericho's, and that's all it took. So what it's suggestive is it's not necessarily your line of sight. It's their line of sight that's the trigger mechanism. Or you can trigger it yourself.
So it's sort of like queuing it up. You know, it's
yeah, exactly. Like you need that extra element to pull the trigger. But you can have it constantly in waiting, and even if you can't see their eyes, if their eyes see you, it becomes this bug bladder beast of troll kind of equation. I'll let that sink in for Hitchhiker's Guide fans.
You are on a bring your towel tip tonight. That's what
I have definitely know where my towel is.
But I like that. Yeah. No, you're.
Leave. Never darken my towels again. My hat. My towel.
Wasn't it Proteus who had that ability too? From from X-Men, Xavier's son.
Power. It seems like anytime Xavier plants his seed, the end results are just outright devastating. Proteus will be very much featured in the final episode of this arc, because his powers could be defined as nothing less than godlike.
Right.
He becomes one of those world shapers, like Scarlet Witch would later become. Early Scarlet Witch, I think, is a heavy hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had this power that no one really could quite tell you what exactly, precisely, specifically, empirically.
Right. It was undefinable.
Yeah, it was like, she's got the hex powers. You know, what does that mean? It means I've answered your question. Oh, I'm sorry. I sound like a Trump press secretary.
It's alternate. I'm waiting for secondary mutations to come up in some of those press conferences.
It's a mutant fact.
No, but you're absolutely right.
You know why it's a fact? Because they were the future trolls, not them.
I was listening to an interview with the woman that played Scarlet Witch in the Civil War, in Civil War II, and in Age of Ultron, Olsen, Elizabeth Olsen, and they had asked her what her powers were, and she was like, I do this, and then things happen. That's what my powers are. And essentially, that's what it was in the comics, too. Like,
yeah, it was just sort of a wave of the hand and whatever the writer needed.
Right. Referred to as, I think, probability manipulation, I think, is what they referred to it as, which...
Yeah, I think that was it, because, like, you know, it's not outside the realm of probability that, I don't know, bricks would rain down on your enemies in the middle of the desert.
Right, you might have a 0.0001%.
Yeah, it's highly unlikely, but it could always be one of those gods must be crazy kind of things.
You're going deep tonight. Was it a cope?
Yeah.
Was it a cope?
Or it could be like that, what was the Adam Sandler movie where he was telling all the stories to his nephew and niece, and then they would sort of come true, but then you would have the big reveal that it wasn't really spontaneously raining gumballs. It was just an accident on the overpass with a gumball-carrying truck.
I never saw that movie.
I'm trying to remember the name of that.
It wasn't Click, and it wasn't the...
God. Now I don't owe you.
It's fine. We don't need to know the Adam Sandler.
No longer owe you. We're even now.
We don't need to know the Adam Sandler movie. It's fine.
You're better off not knowing.
But that's the thing about this is, like you said, it really is kind of a paint you out of a corner's power set that you can use, unless it's been very clearly defined early on by the creator. You can look no further. We've talked about this. We talked about this on Amazing Comicast at length, and we've talked about it on this show at length. Look no further than the Martian Manhunter if you want the psionic Swiss knife or Swiss Army knife of characters.
But even then, there is a clear definition, or at least they've sort of over the years cemented his powers into place. You know, he's not suddenly going to have yet another power, ideally. At least nobody's been afforded that. Where, you know, you do get those characters from time to time that are just, like you say, they're just your immediate out. If you've painted yourself into a corner, they come in with a, you know, some kind of air gun and blow dry the whole thing so you can walk across it and finish that last little bit unscathed. And she was certainly that. If, you know, Stan, I don't know what to do. You're Scarlet Witch. Perfect. where, you know, Cyclops isn't spontaneously going to start breathing fire. Because, you know, you're all free, you know, there's for some reason, only fire will do the trick. I don't know where fire would do the trick better than Optic Blast, so it was not the best possible choice.
In some weird Indiana Jones riddle to get that you're trapped.
That's right.
Well, if I internalize this plasma for my Optic Blast, I wonder if I can blow it out my mouth. There it goes. We'll forget this ever happened.
That's right. You know, it's like those guys who could, like, take a big swig of milk and shoot it out their junk.
No.
I guess we're no longer even.
No, tear ducts, no. No. That's the girl.
Curse you, Japanese performance artist.
But yeah, no, that's always been the thing about psionics is when you need it, and we'll talk about this, I guess, later, was there was the heady days of the early days of the X-Men and the Avengers, and you know, after kind of after the Kirby, Lee, Ditko days, and before what we would consider the modern era, where everybody really cares about continuity and where things came from and origin and where things are going and being able to track everything, right? And being able to say, no, this is not in the power set. In the early days, they didn't do it. I don't think it was a lack of imagination, but I do think it was just, why would we paint ourselves into that corner?
Yeah.
You know? But in the middle there...
sometimes there were deliberate corner paintings.
Right.
It's like, let's paint ourselves in a corner to introduce this new power.
Right. But later...
No.
As imaginations grew, we started seeing, you know, secondary mutations and power painting and things like we'll talk about in the next issue, where apparently one of your greatest psionic defenses is being related to somebody that has psionics.
Oh, okay. That helps.
Because like, oh, well, Havoc needs to be stronger. How can we make Havoc stronger? Let's have Scott shoot him dead in the face with an optic blast. Oh, that did the trick. Why? Why?
Why
did that do the trick? So there's a lot of that going on. I do want to talk about, as we kind of reach the halfway mark, there's a subset of psionics that I don't think that we have talked about yet. And that is psionics in the physical. The physical manipulation of psionics. And what I mean by that is there's a couple characters out there that use their psionic abilities to influence themselves physically. And one in particular that we have talked about ad nauseum, I think, probably at this point, because we about once every 6 months will get on a tear talking about Identity Crisis.
Oh, yes.
And the character in question here is Deathstroke the Terminator. Because Deathstroke has 5 second precognition, because he's using the another trope, the using 90% of his brain trope.
Oh, yes. Okay. So he sort of gets grandfathered into psionics.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got guys like Taskmaster, who has...
Oh, yes.
Who has... Not only does he have photographic reflexes, so all he has to do is see you use martial arts or hack a computer or make a souffle, and he can do that. But also, it got to the point where if he really tried, he could emulate your superpower.
Indeed.
Yeah. So,
I think what's interesting there is initially, you know, it's put forth as that sort of, you know, auto-reflexive type of approach to, you know, his power is that his body can do whatever he sees someone else do, to the point of literally extrapolating beyond, like, you know, if he watches an Olympic gymnast for 20 minutes and like everybody else watching the Summer Games changes the channel because he's tired of looking at prepubescent girls being banded about for the glory of their country, then he could do the entire routine without benefit of having seen the entire floor exercises.
Correct. Now, to speak to what you were speaking to before about having a limiter, having a cost for your power, every time the Taskmaster were to use his ability to, you know, memorize Captain America's shield throwing abilities or Hawkeye's bow abilities or Shang-Chi's kung fu stylings, he would lose a memory of his own. So he would, almost like Legion, would lose his memories when he's taking the memories of someone or taking the abilities of someone else for one
of
his memories.
So is he losing one of the power or one of the physical or mental memories, or is he losing his actual, like, you know, I can't remember my my mom's middle name.
Like fifth birthday, learning to ride a bike. Yes, his explicit memories. So
like learning to ride a bike wouldn't be a bad one to lose because he could just watch someone ride a bike.
Okay. But all right, you got me.
But watching someone else's fifth birthday does not replace your own. Especially that one little shit kid blew the candles out on your cake.
So he did have a really cool thing that they introduced, kind of an aside to his character, where he has a banker, and this banker controls all of his money from his mercenary operations. But also, the banker holds all of his memories. So if he has a memory he really wants to keep, he will give it to the banker, So the banker can hold it for him in sort of a transference system so that he could have it back. If, you know, if take this memory, this memory, this memory. I don't want to lose those in case I want to memorize.
I bet the fees are horrendous, though.
Oh, I bet you, like at an ATM? Yeah, yeah. The brain
ATM.
It's
even worse because other brain banks will charge on top of what your brain bank charges.
Right. You can't. Yeah, you've got to be real careful. But, you know, we talked about...
Unless you go to one of those brain banks where they'll refund the extra fees from other brain banks.
But if you remember, but back to Deathstroke, if you remember the one of the coolest scenes in Identity Crisis, for as heavy a comic as that is after the death of Ray Palmer's wife, they have the funeral. They do what superheroes do, which is go to catch the supervillain. Deathstroke is number one on the list for the assassination because he's the world's greatest super assassin. So they go after him. With no evidence, no nothing, they go after him. And he single-handedly, one by one, takes down the Flash, the Green Lantern. Who else was in that cadre?
Green Arrow, Gotham.
Yeah, just proceeds to take them down one by one because he can preempt their movements. He knows what's going to happen because he's using quote unquote 90% of his brain, which is one of my favorite tropes ever. he only has 5 second precognition, but when you're Deathstroke, that's all you need.
It's very reminiscent of a character of mine from Kid Tapeworm that I'm still developing. The Gray Matter, who was a scientist trying to tap into the ability to use 100% of his brain, and as a result of his experiments, which failed, as is often the case in comics, he became 100% brain.
Really?
So head to toe, he just looks like, you know, he's got all the whorls and pink fleshy matter of a brain.
The Jell-O mold Gray Matter.
Yeah, that's all he is a brain. He has to run around in a suit that looks like the one Doomsday was buried in.
But yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about, because we talk a lot about the physical manifestation or the mental manifestations of psionic abilities, but we don't often talk about the physical. And there's a lot of characters that use kind of a physical psionic.
In fact, that's very much plays into one of the things that occurred to me was since we've sort of established conceptually whether, you know, Marvel/Disney agrees or not. Conceptually, mutants aren't just some sort of wild, random evolution gone mad that's just spitting out every iteration possible at will or as needed to fill in a plot line, but are in reality just the multitude of manifestations of a single power, which is psionics. Characters like Quicksilver.
Right.
Who are manipulating physical matter. And in fact, those characters, those psionic characters that can change shape or size, are also utilizing that sort of material and physical manipulation. We're literally defying physics. Because, like, say, let's say we're Mystique.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Let's be generous. Let's say she's 5'9".
Sure.
You know, buck naked and soaking wet. She's 5'9". Let's
Which
make
we
her
saw in the first movie, by the way.
That's... Yeah, buck naked and soaking wet. But let's be generous. She's a tall gal, pushing 6 feet. And let's say she wants to, you know, for some reason, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants were infiltrating the premiere of The Princess Bride.
God damn them! Why would you
I know.
Do that?
Can't they leave something for us?
Leave Carrie Elwes alone.
That's right. But they need an Andre the Giant to at least get them far enough into Grauman's Chinese Theater that they can find whatever it is that got left behind there by Toad.
Your brain is an amazing place to live.
So, you know, she's putting on raw size and tonnage and stuff. So that is, unless she's becoming incredibly hollow, unless she's like Baymax all of a sudden.
Wouldn't that be weird? Wouldn't that be a weird kicker to her ability?
I was like, you know, you go up like, man, Audrey, you're kind of balloony tonight.
Yeah, there's nothing inside of there.
Yeah, anybody want a peanut? I don't know, you just seem like you were... I don't know, a lot more substantial when we were on location.
You really got a lot of give there. Yeah,
it's just, it's kind of freakish. It puts you in the mind of super elastic bubble plastic. So, you know, there is that sort of, you know, to flesh herself out, or if she needs to pass as a child, it's the opposite. And then, of course, there's always the problem you have, be it with psionics or technology or what have you. I was researching some stuff for a movie game show for Alcon this week, and looking for quotes from Ant-Man. And then in the on IMDb, there was the goofs section. Somebody was going on about, you know, the physics of Ant-Man. He should have weighed so much that no ant capable of lifting, you know, X number of times its own weight could lift the weight of an entire human being concentrated into an ant's size. It's like, shut up. It's PEM particles.
Right.
A Heisenberg compensator. It just, it does what it does. So shut the hell up and enjoy the movie.
So how do you feel about
Sagan ass?
How do you feel about? So we've talked about the mutant gene, right? And the mutant gene it triggers in a certain manifesting way to allow latent psionic abilities to work.
Yeah, so basically Homo Superior just all have psionic powers that get triggered at puberty.
Latent psionic abilities.
Makes puberty even more frightening.
Does the metagene work the same way on the DC side, in your opinion?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Because both of those allow for whatever you feel like presenting. You know, Kookaburra, that's a neat name nobody has a trademark attached to. What does Kookaburra do? Well, we'll give him some powers that have nothing to do with the Australian bird, but, you know, it doesn't matter because the powers are what's central here. And whatever powers we impart upon our character, we don't, you know, mutations, metagenes, and other things like that supplant the necessity of technology, magic, freak accidents, alien visitation, radiation. You know, radiation was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to science fiction.
Yeah.
Suddenly you could have everything from fleshy-headed mutants to giant insects. Why? Radiation. Funny, radiation usually kills.
It's the mutation. And that's the other, like we were talking about it, I think, in the first issue of this story arc, is a lot of this, if done correctly, is irreplicable.
Exactly.
The circumstances.
Irreproducible effect, like the Flash, or, you know, the idea behind, it was an interesting thing that when Byrne was creating Alpha Flight or fleshing them out beyond just being, hey, look, Canadian superheroes and X-Men. When he was working on the Alpha Flight comic series to explain Sasquatch.
Right.
He brilliantly tied Sasquatch into the Incredible Hulk mythos. And the way he did this was in the same way that we get Doc Samson or the Leader or the any number of other characters, the Abomination, where somebody is trying to reproduce the specific effects that gave us the Hulk, only under controlled environment, under controlled conditions. Apparently, the missing element has always been rescuing a beatnik.
From the side of the road.
Understand. Yeah, that all it takes is, you needed, it's known as the drifter element, and it was identified by Dr. Stephen Hawking.
Drifter element.
Drifter element. In about 1983, very small paper he did on the side while discovering the inner workings of the universe. But, you know, what he did was basically say, here is Dr. Lankowski taking on the task of trying to replicate the gamma ray infusing that gave us the Hulk under the conditions used in the Incredible Hulk TV series.
Just in the TV series. Like, so we're breaking a meta fourth wall.
I know most of the time I like use analogs like this, but that is actually true. He deliberately, and if you look at it, he's like sitting in the David Bruce Wayne Banner, whatever the hell they renamed it for the TV series. He's like sitting in the mega chair there, in the specialized Dennis Barber gynecologist chair there, and getting zappy flashied. for the benefit of this ridiculous experiment that was a gross misappropriation of university funds.
They didn't know. It was, they slid it under the wire there. They didn't know. Exactly.
Well, there's not a lot of oversight in Canadian universities, apparently, in opinion. So, so the result was a kind of Hulk effect without benefit of the drifter element that was controllable, was self-controllable. And he explained away the orange fur over the green fur, because like even Doc Sampson's hair turned green. Because he wasn't prior to experimenting, he was not a natural lime. But he explained away the orange fur, which was necessary to make Sasquatch look cool and not awkward.
Right.
Like one of those rabbits they used to sell at Easter, back before somebody said that's not a great idea to dye animals.
It's just to use paws, Easter dye to make green rabbits. To
dip mammals and birds, baby mammals and birds into it. But they, I don't even know where I was headed with this anymore. Oh, but he explained it all the way with sunspots, but this has nothing to do with psionics. But then again, maybe the bombardment unlocked psionic abilities. Who can say?
Well, but isn't that kind of the idea? That because how many in the comics? How many people did we try to use the super soldier serum on?
Yeah,
never worked. Because
what I said earlier about the Abomination was wrong, because he was a super soldier serum guy, not a gamma radiation guy.
But it's the same idea, right? Is that we're trying to use this thing on hundreds of people. They don't work. We either kill them or nothing happens or they become monsters. And,
yeah.
But the one time it works, it's because all of the stars align with their genetic makeup, their particular set of you know, DNA and RNA combinations along with enzymes, and you know, the moon was in the seventh sun, and then the house of the rising, yeah, you know, and it was the year of the turtle, and all of a sudden it all works. But that has to line up to a certain psionic, you know, a latent ability in that person.
That's
I would
true.
Think.
I think that, you know, Captain America only occurs with a Steve Rogers.
Correct.
In other words, short of cloning Steve Rogers, don't get me started with Ben Reilly, you cannot get all of the necessary elements.
Right, exactly.
And that's, you know, who knows? Maybe he has like chimeric demon DNA or some other little ridiculous factors that no one knows about until they go looking for them that you can't find just anywhere.
Right, and they just kept going, destroying lives until they found the one that worked. Because, you know, when they approach Steve Rogers with this idea, they're like, hey, you know, we got this thing we want to test on you. They don't say, hey, we've killed 150 other privates trying to get this thing to work. It's like, you're the one. Never mind the fact that behind that weird, you know, stasis pod that they put him in, you know, the room next to it is just stacks and stacks of...
it's like cordwood in there.
That's right.
What's that smell? Oh, it's just an after effect of the...
Yeah.
We haven't done the procedure yet. It's a four effect.
That's right.
Right? Let's get in there, soldier.
That's the new antiseptic. We developed it. It's right, cool. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's new.
Think about it. Don't think about it.
It smells a little corpsey, but it's okay.
One of the coolest.
Yes, it's new. Our new term. It corpsey. Smells a little corpsey.
Corpsey. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
It's just a little corpsey.
Don't
worry about it. It's a little corpsey back there, but you'll be okay. By the time we're done, you won't even care.
One of the coolest, I guess, realizations of a psionic ability, and of course I'm going to refer back to Doom Patrol. It sort of, you know, dovetails nicely into what we're doing here, because it's such a theater of the absurd, and it's so smartly written that there's a lot of psionic ability in the book that I never would have thought of existing. And there's an absolute coal. If you were to be allowed to write a comic, this would have been an ability you would have created. There's a character in the Brotherhood of Dada, because they're trying to decide whether they're going to be the Brotherhood of Evil. And the leader, Mr. Nobody's, basically says, you know, Brotherhood of Evil, Brotherhood of Good. We don't limit ourselves to such things. We are the Brotherhood of Dada. You know, good and evil are just ideas.
So literally, function will follow form.
Yes. And one of the characters is called The Quiz. Now the quiz has she's a villain, but what her villainous ability is to manifest superpowers that you haven't thought of yet. So if you're fighting her, she can manifest any ability that you haven't thought of.
Okay.
So if you're fighting her, you have to constantly be saying to yourself, super strength, flight, intangibility, telekinetic powers, you know, all of these things all the time, or she can manifest those abilities that she wants at will. Sort of like a Green Lantern effect.
Explosive floating eyeballs.
Yeah.
Why would we think that? Because you have to.
Exactly. You have to be thinking those things while you fight her. It was a really cool concept. And when I was reading it, I was like, this is something that Cole's jacked up brain would come up with. Just to screw with people. And it was perfect.
That's pretty true. Because, wow.
So do you have any... We've got to start wrapping this up. So do you have any... any final thoughts, anything you want to talk about before we take off out of here for the night?
Well, I think ultimately, as this expanded out of a single issue into a full-blown arc, it occurs to me that maybe a hope I didn't realize I had until it had until this thing began is that we begin to look as comic readers at every superpower, short of those like, you know, artificially created. Or, you know, done, you know, machine based,
right.
Or
technology
based. Or magic based, from the standpoint of a psionic ability somewhere coming from the brain, essentially universally either telekinetic or psychokinetic in nature.
Yeah.
Because those are the two core manifests. That's the split in the psionic tree from which all other powers then branch. And I'm sure there's somebody out there who could be really ambitious and sit down and say, yeah, I wonder if you took like this root psionics, split it into telekinesis and psychokinesis, and then where does that take you? Into things like cyberkinesis and pyrokinesis and the fascinating kinesis, which is one of the most powerful yet pointless powers one can be imbued with.
Kinesis
is like this constant cycle of creation and destruction. So it's literally like the this sort of kaleidoscope of powers, if you will, where it just is constantly in motion, constantly changing. It is the birth death cycle in a split second. So it's constantly creating and destroying itself. So you could sit around for your entire life and have the power of kinesis and never know, because it doesn't really manifest itself in any way, discernibly measurable way. Only powerful psychokinetics like Professor X can detect. It's like, Gene, yeah, I know, Doc. I caught it. It's kinesis. I love it.
And the saddest thing about that is that while they can detect it
and
identify it, they don't give a shit. I mean, that's the saddest thing.
It's just a big joke to them.
Right.
So the kinetics are just...
it's a pie in the face to to the psionic community is really what it is.
They're just like, I'm a clown. I'm here to amuse you.
Here we go.
You tell me why I'm kinetic. why I have kinesis.
Where were you going before?
I think what I was saying is that it was the where all you can branch off of any given power into a next subset of powers that then branches off into yet another subset of powers. So you could say that, you know, if you follow this path, a character like, say, Quicksilver is telekinetic, and then that's branching off into something else that is manipulation of the physical world that then manifests itself solely as run fast.
Right.
So there's sort of a file path for those who know what that means.
And keep in mind, like, the fact that you and I are doing this show to someone, to some Precambrian or you know,
like a trilobite.
Yes, yes, a trilobite. It's some sort of, you know, a Neanderthal, you know, hunter gatherer society.
So Andaluvian.
Yeah, let's call it like a Ludidical Andaluvian society. We are the psionics.
Oh, that's so true.
The fact that we can do math, or you know, compose sentences, or drive a car,
or do that underarm fart thing.
Oh, that one kills him.
Yeah,
that one kills him. If I could go back in time, that I think that changes the course of humanity right there.
Well, you know, who is it? Vandal Savage. That's how he came to power.
That's him, buddy. It's right there.
That's where it started. It didn't hurt that he was immortal.
That and the hand fart water squirt.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah, that one got him. That one got the Egyptians. That's what sold it.
Yeah,
right there.
Every time the Nile flooded, boy,
I'm the magician.
People would flock to see that.
Right.
It's like, you know, Moses and the royal vizier, and they're duking it out with snake staffs. I want to see. We're here to see water fart,
he's
boy.
He's providing a soundtrack with his underarm farts and water right. hands.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Apocalypse is over there putting on a hell of a show.
That's right. Damn it. All right, why don't you wrap this up? I think we've done enough damage tonight.
That's right. Somewhere couched in all that was this, the amazing diversity from characters like Simon, who can, like, shoot metal blasts and cloud men's minds, to apparently underarm farts.
The Shadow. And, it goes from the Shadow to Pauly Shore, all right?
Yeah, pretty much. And then, of course, you have us, where our power is, of course, Kinesis Kinesis. This is actually how Kinesis Kinesis manifests itself, in case I left you wondering.
It's shouting into the void, and the void shouting back at you, just in an Aurora Boris Mobius strip of screaming pain.
Right. And somehow you inflict that upon others.
Which is what we do with this show, so you're welcome.
Right.
You're welcome.
Exactly. You have benefited greatly from our psionic abilities this week, yet again. So you can Kinesis us up on the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can Kinesis tweet, you can see the Kinesis tweets on
Kinesis
Twitter.
Tweet.
Kinesis tweet is also a power that the kookaburras have. If you were wondering what kookaburra's power is, it's just a guy who goes around Kinesis tweeting. On at the Jedi Cole U, we have the check out the Facebook pages for Jedi Cole Universe. Hey Kids Comics, I'm going to try to start utilizing those a little bit more. I keep saying that, and I Kinesis my way out of it.
It's your power is convincing yourself.
Right.
Nah, not this week.
All right. A little shameless self-promotion here. As you listen to this, on Saturday this week, I'll be at the Lost Toys on Empire Central in Dallas from, I believe, noon to 5. I'll probably actually be there from noon to 7. It takes me so damn long to pack everything back out. But I'll be selling all kinds of cool Marvel Legends and DC Multiverse and naturally a lot of Star Wars stuff, some really cool Hot Wheels based on comics and movies and what have you. All kinds of bizarre crap I've drawn together since the last time I did one of their things. It's basically just a free toy show. Come in, shop the Lost Toys, shop the vendors. It's just a whole lot of fun and a whole lot of cool. So check that out if you can, if you're in the Dallas area. Also coming up in March and mid-March, go visit the Hey Kids Comics. Go visit Convention Awareness Kinesis at
Kinesis Awareness.
Kinesis Awareness, Convention Awareness Project Texas, for all the conventions in Texas, including in March, AllCon the 13th. 13th year of AllCon, 12th year of game shows, where there will be amazing new game shows and amazing returning game shows, including the ever popular Screen Time that I'm writing right now. And be sure and check that out, because I'm in like 8.5% of the entire weekend of over 400 things going on. Thursday of AllCon is free if you want to just come check it out, see if you like it. But I can pretty much promise you, if you drop the money for a four-day pass, it's worth every penny because there is nonstop stuff all weekend long. It's not one of these shows where, oh, this is this hour, this is this hour. This hour there's like 9 things. This hour there's 8 things. This hour there's 14 things. You have to pick and choose hour to hour what you're going to do. And I've been involved all 13 years, but it is literally people who go and experience it, it becomes their favorite convention very quickly. I could go on for days, but we don't have that kind of time. And I'm getting my psychic signals from Andy that it's time to kinesis this thing for the week.
It's time to portobello kinesis this thing to bed.
That's right. And also a big thank you to the Jordan and the folks at Cinelinks for letting us carry on over there as well. So if you're not finding us on Jedi Call Universe or Podbean or where's the place we were surprised to find ourselves?
Reddit.
Reddit.
Mr. Spindly Bits doing the Lord's work out there.
Yes, indeed. Another fine kinetic, I'm sure.
Yes.
If not, he should be. And finally, thank you to the guys at Cinelinks for letting us add our show to the mix. And so regardless of where you found us, what should people do with using their kinetic minds and things printed on paper in bright colors?
What? I lost you somewhere in there, man. I don't know what's happening anymore, man. I feel like Allen Ginsberg over here.
So I'll help you out here. That people should perhaps read.
Oh God, yeah. Okay, sorry, I didn't know where you were going. Yeah, please buy, collect, enjoy your comics. There's a lot going on in the world, and you know, there's a lot of marches, there's a lot of conversation, there's a lot of open dialogue right now. There's a lot of closed dialogue right now, too. But, you know, as comic fans, I think the best thing, you know, what we've always done is engage and read and learn and grow and pay attention to what's going on in the world through these books. We've talked many times about how these books are a Rosetta Stone for, you know, what's going on in culture and in society and sociopolitically. And with the advent of Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and you know, great sites that are doing great comic book reporting, you can get some of these kind of metaphorical ideas out there. Look no further than Nick Spencer doing the Captain America Hydra thing, which started out as a joke and something we all kind of were like, yeah, whatever. But he had the foresight to start creating something that is very poignant today. So if you get the opportunity to pick up some of his stuff, read it. Enjoy your comics. Use them as escapism. Break the kinesis cycle. Love your life. Love your neighbor. Hug somebody. Send us an email. Whatever you want to do. We love you guys, and we are thankful for you. And
jcumail@yahoo.com.
There you go. And in an uncertain world, knowing that at any point in time you can pull your favorite, you know, issue of Batman off of a shelf and read it is a great feeling to have. So enjoy your comics, read them. Sorry to be long-winded. I think that I'm caught in a kinesis cycle that we need to break. So say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Did you hear that? I said goodnight to your brains. To your brains.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with my mind. That other thing, ignore that. File that away. Put me on a do not call list because I'm up in ya.